Coming up on Locked On Dodgers, I'll answer a listener question about a potential impact of the Universal DH, and then we will talk about the best number 2 and number 22 in Dodgers history, and some of the least best ones too. So, let's get Locked On Dodgers.
You are Locked On Dodgers, your daily Los Angeles Dodgers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Dodger fans. This is Locked On Dodgers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day. Remember, this show is free and available on all podcast platforms and on YouTube simply by searching for Locked On Dodgers. Or even better, please subscribe in all those places and never miss a day because you know we're not going to. If this is your first time listening or watching, my name is Jeff Snyder and my co-host is Vince Semperio, although it's just going to be me today. Vince and I are both lifelong Dodger fans just like you, and we've also both spent time covering the Dodgers in the press box and the locker room. So we're not quite insiders, which is good, but we bring you the smart fans' perspective on our boys in blue every weekday morning. Please go ahead and subscribe wherever you listen or watch, and let's talk about some Dodgers. So, first of all, today, February 23rd, is Vince's birthday. Happy birthday to the Vince. He has the day off to celebrate his birthday, so I am going solo today. He went solo yesterday because I was on vacation with my family, and so it's a fair trade-off. But I just want to wish Vince a happy birthday, let him know that I really enjoy podcasting with him, and I'm glad that we're friends. I love you, Vince. Okay, now that's out of the way. As I'm recording this, it's not yet February 23rd. It's February 22nd, or 2/22/22, as you may have heard. And I didn't get a chance because I wasn't on yesterday's podcast that, you know, aired today for me. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the number 2 and the number 22 in Dodgers history. Both numbers, well, one of the numbers is retired, and one of the numbers will surely be retired at some point in the not-too-distant future. And because of that, you know, it's probably, I haven't looked, I've written about retired numbers in the past, and I don't remember if there's any other team that has both 2 and 22 retired. There's no reason to remember that, but the Dodgers definitely will. Number 2 obviously is retired for Tommy Lasorda, and number 22 will be retired for Clayton Kershaw. And I think it's safe to say that those two are the most famous and most the greatest 2 and 22 in Dodgers history. But both numbers have kind of a storied history, or at least a somewhat storied history. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about those numbers today. And then, like I said at the beginning, I will end this with answering a listener question about the impact of the Universal DH. Let's talk about number 2 first. So Tommy Lasorda started wearing number 2 when he became the Dodgers manager in 1976, and he wore it forever until he retired, and then it was retired. He was elected to the Hall of Fame, and his number was retired, and nobody has worn number 2 since Tommy Lasorda. And so before Tommy Lasorda, at least among players, I don't know if there were ever any coaches who wore number 2 before Lasorda, but players, there were 14 or 15 number 2s, and some interesting names on here. Leo DeRocher wore number 2 for the Dodgers when he was a player for the Dodgers. He was a player, and he later was a manager with the Dodgers, and I think he may have even, let's see, was he a player manager? He was a player manager for much of his career with the Dodgers, actually. Almost his entire time with the Dodgers as a player, he was also the manager. So he wore number 2, which, that it's kind of interesting that there's two Hall of Fame managers who've worn number 2 for the Dodgers. Other interesting names on here, Randy Jackson. Randy Jackson, not of American Idol fame. This was actually a white third baseman, not a black bass player. But Randy Jackson, really his name is the only notable thing about him. Don Demeter, who just recently passed away, if I remember right, just in the last month or two, November 29th, 2021, he passed away at the age of 86. He was one of the last surviving Brooklyn Dodgers. I think there's only maybe a 10 or 12 left now. Obviously, Sandy Koufax is one. But Don Demeter played just three games with the Brooklyn Dodgers, got three plate appearances, but then played for the LA Dodgers for 3 or 4 years and played for a lot of different teams over the course of his career. But he did wear number two with the Dodgers in 1959 and 60 in LA. Another interesting one is Dick Schofield. Not the Dick Schofield who you might have heard of if you're about my age, watched growing up playing shortstop for the Angels. That was Dick Schofield Jr. This is Dick Schofield Sr., also I think was known as Ducky Schofield. And he played for a lot of different teams in his career, looks like seven different teams. And 104 of his games over 2 years came with the Dodgers in 1966 and 67. But perhaps his most notable contribution to Dodgers history, his son, Dick Schofield, also played for the Dodgers briefly, just nine games in 1995, did not wear number two. He wore number 22. We'll talk about that in a minute. But then also, Dick Schofield Sr.'s grandson, Dick Schofield Jr.'s nephew, was Jason Wirth. Dick Schofield Jr.'s sister is the mother of Jason Wirth. And Jason Wirth, as you know, played for the Dodgers for 2 years early in his career. He started with the Blue Jays and then spent 2 years with the Dodgers before going to the Phillies and becoming a big star. Was decent with the Dodgers and wore number 28 with the Dodgers. But so Jason Wirth's grandfather, Dick Schofield, Ducky Schofield, wore number two with the Dodgers. Another interesting one is Zoilo Versailles. I think that's how it's pronounced. Zoilo Versailles only played one season with the Dodgers and was nothing to write home about. He was not a very good hitter at that point in his career. And interestingly, Zoilo Versailles actually won the MVP award in 1965 when he was playing for the Minnesota Twins. He led the league in plate appearances, at-bats, runs scored, doubles, triples, and strikeouts. I haven't ever looked to see if he deserved that MVP. I assume he didn't, like, based on what we know now. And let's see. Zoilo Versailles, if we're going based on WAR, it was just a weak year in some ways in the American League. Among position players, he actually was the highest WAR, had the highest WAR among position players in the American League. Sudden Sam McDowell, Indians pitcher, had a higher WAR, but it's understandable why he wouldn't have gotten the MVP. But yeah, Zoilo Versailles, 3 years later, after his MVP season, played for the Dodgers and was not very good. He had a negative 1.1 WAR. In fact, in his career, he played 12 seasons and had 12.6 WAR, and 7.2 of that came in his MVP season. So he was worth 7.2 WAR that season and 5.4 WAR the rest of his career combined. So that's Zoilo Versailles. Bobby Valentine, early in his playing career, he came up with the Dodgers and played a couple years with the Dodgers and WAR number two during his time with the Dodgers and later in his career during his time with the Mariners in 1979. And that's about it. There were a couple other number twos, but ultimately, when Tommy Lasorda took it over, it was his forever, and it remains his forever because nobody will ever wear that number again for the Dodgers. So I'm going to come back in a minute, and we're going to cover 22, which has a much longer history, a lot more 22s than twos in Dodger history, and some pretty interesting names on there. So thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day, and be sure to keep it locked on Dodgers. Hey, let's talk about Built Bar. Built Bar, as you know, is the best tasting protein bar in the world. Today, I drove home from St. George, Utah this morning, afternoon with my family. And then shortly after, my 10-year-old son and I had to head to baseball practice because he had practice. And he had had lunch in the car, but it was getting close to dinner time, but he hadn't had a chance to eat dinner yet. So he just grabbed himself a coconut brownie chunk Built Bar, and he ate that in the car on the way there, and it was great. Gave him the energy he needed to do his baseball practice, and it was delicious, and he was happy to eat it. He chose to eat it, and something that a 10-year-old will eat willingly that's healthy, That's pretty awesome. Every Built Bar is covered in chocolate. They're all low calorie, low sugar, low carb, high protein, high fiber. All the good lows, all the good highs, everything you want. And they are all delicious. So go to Built.com and use promo code LOCKED15 and you will get 15% off your next order. That's promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at Built.com. All right, I'm back. I want to thank you again for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day. I want to tell you about Locked On MLB Prospects. Host Lindsey Crosby is a prospect encyclopedia, and he's going deep on the MLB stars of tomorrow. It's free and available wherever you get podcasts. So we talked about number two. Now let's talk about number 22. As you know, Clayton Kershaw has worn number 22 since very early in his career. He wore, what was it, 54 early in his, yeah, he wore 54 when he first came up. Mark Sweeney had number 22 for the Dodgers at the time, and I've heard Mark Sweeney in person tell the story of when he realized Clayton Kershaw was going to be special, and he knew that Kershaw wanted number 22, and so he voluntarily gave it up. Sweeney at that point, he was a journeyman. He only spent a year or so with the Dodgers anyway. And so he gave up that number. It's been Clayton Kershaw's ever since. But before Clayton Kershaw, a lot of guys have worn number 22. More than 22 players. Probably looks like 35-ish. I'm not going to count them. But there's been a bunch. So we'll let's start earliest. I'll list them all, and I will just stop and maybe say some things about a few of them who are interesting. But there are a lot of names who you're going to say, oh, never heard of that guy, never heard of that guy, never heard of that guy. We have Jack Quinn in 1932, Rosie Ryan, 33, Ray Barris, 34, Curly Onis, 35, Vince Sherlock, 35, Tom Baker, 36, Roy Henshaw, 37, Buddy Hassett, 38, Lindsey Deal, 39, Red Evans, 39, nobody in 1940, Bill Swift in 1941, not the Bill Swift who pitched for the Mariners and other teams in the 80s and 90s, but Bill Swift, a different guy. Johnny Allen from 41 to 43, Bob Chipman in 43, Bill Sales also in 43, Jack Franklin in 44, Bill Lorman in 44, and Frank Worm in 44, Ray Hathaway in 45, and then we get to our first notable one, Gene Hermansky from 46 to 51. Gene Hermansky was a pretty good hitter for the Dodgers, a little bit of a slugger by some standards, 1948, he had 15 home runs, but a really solid in his time with the Dodgers. In his seven seasons, he had a 119 OPS plus, so a pretty good hitter, never really a regular. In 1948, the year that he had 15 homers, that was his only season ever getting even 400 plate appearances in a season. But Gene Hermansky was well-liked and a popular Dodger, and a notable name in Dodger history, if not a superstar. Andy Pafko also wore it in 1951. Andy Pafko was a very good baseball player for a long time. Didn't play very long with the Dodgers, but a total of two seasons, 234 games. But he wore number 22 in 1951. And then nobody for a few years until 1958, Johnny Podras came along and wore it from 1958 to 1966. Johnny Podras, a huge name in Dodger history for his performance in the regular season and in the postseason. If you've ever paid much attention to Dodger history really at all, you know Johnny Podras' name. He was 4-1 in the World Series for the Dodgers, 4-0 between 1955, 59, and 63 when he won three World Series rings with the Dodgers, and just well-loved Dodger. He's a guy who, if the Dodgers believed in retiring numbers that weren't Hall of Famers, Johnny Podras, 22, probably would have already been retired for Johnny Podras years ago, because he is somewhat of a legend in Dodgers history. He passed away about 14 years ago at the age of 75. And is buried in New York, where he was born and grew up. So that was 58 to 66. In 1968, Mudcat Grant wore number 22 for the Dodgers. Mudcat Grant was very well known during his time with the Twins in the mid-60s. He finished sixth in the MVP voting in 1965 when he went 21-7. to lead the Twins to the World Series, which they lost to the Dodgers. And just a really good player, really good pitcher, and then bounced around a lot. He actually bounced around before his time with the Twins too, or played for the Indians for a long time before the Twins. And then after the Twins, the Dodgers, the Expos, the Cardinals, the A's, the Pirates, and then back to the A's. So bounced around a lot after his Twins time. And during his time with the Dodgers, he wore number 22, as he did with the Expos and the Cardinals and the Pirates. But Mudcat Grant, very interesting guy. Then Paul Popovich in 1969. Bill Buckner from 70 to 76. Bill Buckner, unfortunately, most well known for his era in the 1986 World Series, but also was a really, really good player for a long time. One of those borderline Hall of Fame guys. And during his time with the Dodgers, was just a great, great hitter. Then in 1977, you have Boog Powell, another guy who was much more well-known for his time with another team. He played for the Orioles for the vast majority of his career. Played just 50 games with the Dodgers, but he wore number 22 during that time. Then we have Don Stanhouse in 1980, Mark Bradley in 81 and 82. Mark Bradley, if I remember right, he was involved in a trade that was notable in Dodgers history. Let's see his transactions. It was not notable. He was involved in a trade, traded to the Mets, but I was thinking it was one of the notable trades, but he was traded for two guys who never made it to the major leagues. So strike that about Mark Bradley. 1983, Dave Sachs wore number 22. Dave Sachs was the brother, older brother of Steve Sachs. Not as good. He was, just as hyped as a prospect, I think, but ended up not having a very successful major league career, but he did wear number 22 for the Dodgers in 1983. From 84 to 89, you had Franklin Stubbs, who I remember watching as a kid. In my mind, he struck out all the time. And I'm going to look now. I haven't compared this. Let's see. Franklin Stubbs, he did strike out 114 times in 501 plate appearances in 1990. That's quite a bit. 107 strikeouts in 465 plate appearances in 1986. For the time, by the standards of the time, those are pretty high strikeout numbers. He was a pretty good power hitter, though. He hit 23 home runs in each of those two seasons. And, played for the Dodgers for several years. Wore number 22. Then you had Don Ossie in 1990. Chad Fonville in 1995. The aforementioned Dick Schofield Jr. also in 1995. And in between those, you had Brett Butler, who wore it from 1991 through 94, and then came back to the Dodgers and wore it again in 1997. Brett Butler was my favorite Dodgers number 22 before Clayton Kershaw, but just a really, really good center fielder. Battled cancer during his playing career, was a fan favorite, a player favorite. Everybody loved Brett Butler. Everybody still loves Brett Butler, and just a really great player, one of my favorites of all time. Then in 1998, you had Thomas Howard. 99 and 2000, you had Devon White, who came up with the Angels in the mid-80s, won a World Series or two with the Blue Jays in the early 90s, and then played for the Dodgers in 1999 and 2000. He's one of those guys, I don't really have any recollection of him playing for the Dodgers other than knowing with my brain that he did, but he bounced around because he won, that's right, he won a World Series with the Marlins too. So he won the World Series in 92 and 93 with the Blue Jays, and then in 97 with the Marlins. And then he left the Marlins, played for the Diamondbacks in 98, made an all-star team, and then 99 and 2000 with the Dodgers, and he was okay. Not very good, not much of a hitter, and was losing some of that speed. He only stole 22 bases in those two seasons combined and was caught 11 times. So his career was winding up. He finished his career in 2001 with the Brewers, but he wore number 22 for the Dodgers. In 2004, a young guy named Edwin Jackson wore number 22 for the Dodgers. 2005 and 2006, Jose Cruz Jr., who was the son of Jose Cruz. Jose Cruz Sr. Had the notable distinction. One of the only guy in probably the last 70 or so years to lead his team in home runs without hitting any home runs at home when he was playing for the Astros in the huge Astrodome that was a killer on power hitters. Jose Cruz, if I remember, he hit 14 home runs to lead the Astros one year, somewhere between 84 and 86. and but hit zero of them at home. And the first guy, the only guy since around the World War II era to lead his team in homers without hitting any at home, Jose Cruz Jr. I remember meeting him when he was in the minor leagues playing for, I think, the San Bernardino Spirit or maybe the Riverside Red Wave at the time. But he played for the Dodgers 2005 and 2006 and wore number 22. Toby Hall also in 2006, and then Mark Sweeney in 2008, and then Clayton Kershaw. And nobody will ever wear it again. Clayton Kershaw obviously will go into the Hall of Fame. His number will be retired. But that's a lot of guys who've worn number 22. And you can see it's been worn almost every year in the Dodgers' history. And yet, whenever Clayton Kershaw leaves the Dodgers, hopefully that's not anytime soon, it will never be worn again by a Dodger. And that's kind of interesting. Since they've had uniform numbers in the early 30s, almost every year somebody's been a 22. So it's a cool number. And, you know, I'll take any opportunity to talk about Clayton Kershaw. As you guys know, if you are longtime listeners, he is my favorite player. And I love Clayton Kershaw, and I love number 22. And I just spent a weekend watching my son play baseball wearing number 22 because Clayton Kershaw is his favorite player, too. So it's pretty cool. I'm going to come back in a minute. I'm going to answer a listener question about a potential ramification of the Universal DH. So please keep it locked on Dodgers. Football might be over for this season, but basketball is in full steam for both pro and college hoops. From all the latest odds, totals, player performance, props, to where to find, to where the next fired coach is going to land, BetOnline.net is the number one spot for all your sports betting needs. BetOnline remains the best spot for all your sports scores, podcasts, and news this season. And it's not just basketball. BetOnline is your source for hockey, boxing, and UFC odds, right to the Olympic coverage and information. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends and action. BetOnline, where the game starts. Okay, I'm going to wrap this up with a listener question. Our buddy Brandon Johnson, he's on Twitter at BrandonJohn442. He is a longtime listener to Locked On Dodgers. And before we were Locked On Dodgers, we were the Scully Avenue podcast, a weekly podcast. Brandon used to listen to us there and send us questions. Brandon's great. If you don't follow Brandon, you should. BrandonJohn442 on Twitter. And he asks, if the DH does become official in the National League, do we anticipate MLB limiting the number of pitchers a team can hold at one time? Do we anticipate the Dodgers keeping an extra pitcher if no limits are enforced? And there's a couple kind of unspoken questions in here, because MLB actually did come up with a rule after the 2019 season that with the 26-man roster, only 13 pitchers could be on the roster at any time. And they then put a hold on that rule, on the implementation of that rule, because of COVID. And so they didn't have that rule in place in 2020 or 2021. And we haven't heard for sure if that rule will be in place for 2022. If you know me, you know that my preference would be to limit the number of pitchers to 11. I think that would solve a ton of different problems that baseball is facing. You would have far fewer pitching changes, a faster pace of game. Starting pitchers would be forced to go deeper. Relief pitchers would be forced to pace themselves and not come out guns blazing, knowing that they might have to go multiple innings. All that stuff would lead to a potentially more offense in the game, which is what would be a good thing. Plus, if you limit it to 11 pitchers, that would be 15 hitters on the roster. And even if you had the DH, that's still six bench players to come off for platoon advantages and whatever. So you could, it would increase offense all the way around, increase contact, increase excitement. I recognize that it's unlikely that they will ever cut it down to 11. I'd be happy with 12. I'll take 13, though, because even then, that gives you, it only gives you four bench players. I wish they'd go to 12 if they're having the Universal DH, which they're going to. But I do expect them to actually implement this rule change that they had decided on to only allow 13 pitchers on the roster. If they don't, I could see the Dodgers, you know, I don't know. It's going to be hard with the DH. Like I said, only four bench players. You have to have a backup catcher. So really you're down to three other bench players, and the Dodgers, like, I think they're going to want to use all of those bench spots. I think the Dodgers might like it if they change the rule to 12 guys so they could use an extra bench spot. One of the things they're also talking about in the CBA negotiations is limiting the number of times a player can be optioned to the minor leagues in a season, which would affect some of the back and forth that the Dodgers and other teams do with regards to their pitchers. There's so many current ways around this system where, okay, we'll send you the minors and theoretically you can't be called up for 10 or 15 days, but, oh, here's a phantom injury. Okay, now we can call this guy back up. It would be fun if they would do away with some of those loopholes. But even then, on any given day, I would like to know, okay, there are only 11 pitchers on the roster, which means there are only a total possible of 6 relief pitchers, and some of them pitched yesterday, and some of them have to pitch tomorrow. And so it really would improve offense a lot, and that would make me very happy. When Brandon asked, do we anticipate the Dodgers keeping an extra pitcher if no limits are enforced? What I do anticipate, what I can say, is I anticipate the Dodgers finding and exploiting every loophole they can to make themselves competitive. In addition to putting together a really good team on the field, the Dodgers have been very, very good and effective at utilizing the rules, manipulating the rules to do things within the rules, lest anyone call them cheaters, but things that are within the rules and yet maybe give them a competitive advantage. We've seen MLB close loopholes because of the Dodgers in the past. My favorite one was a few years ago when they optioned Kenta Maeda to A-ball, I think, maybe even rookie league, knowing that, you know, he was a starter, and so they didn't need him for 4 more days after his start. And there was a loophole that said, if you are sent to the minors, you have to be in the minors for 10 days or whatever. But one of the exceptions was if the minor league season ends. So the Dodgers, this was August or whatever, and they sent Maeda to a team whose season was ending in 2 days. So he never did leave the Dodgers. He stayed in the Dodgers dugout, but technically he was on that rookie league team or the A-ball team, whatever it was. And then once their season ended, they were allowed to call him back up. MLB closed that loophole. That's what the Dodgers do. And so they're going to use every loophole they can find. They're going to put together the roster as intelligently as they can and as creatively as they can. And sometimes that will mean extra pitchers if possible, and sometimes it'll mean extra hitters. But ultimately, the DH is coming to the National League. There's no way this CBA, when it's done, will not include the universal DH. And so it is exciting to think about the potential ramifications of that. So thank you, Brandon, for that question. I appreciate it. Sorry it took me a few days to get to it. If any of you have any questions, we would love to hear from them. I'll give you all the contact info at the end. But thank you, Brandon. Thank you all for listening to this or watching this. We appreciate it. I really appreciate you making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day. And now for your second listen, check out Locked On MLB, where Paul Francis Sullivan, please call him Sully, brings you his unique perspective on the major leagues, past and present. It's free and available wherever you get podcasts. If you aren't watching or listening to Locked On Dodgers every day, we would love if you add 1 or 2 days a month to your rotation. If you have friends or family who might enjoy it as much as you do, please tell them about it. We would love to have more listeners. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Locked On Dodgers. Vince is on Twitter at Vince Samperio. I am on Twitter at Snydog, and the DMs are open in all of those places. Our email address is lockedondodgers@gmail.com, and our phone number for voicemails or texts is 323-863-LOCK-5625. We are here every weekday morning, and we hope you'll be here with us. When you get in your car or sit on your couch, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers. And remember, you don't have to agree, you just have to listen. We'll talk to you tomorrow.